Home. So fortunately I had the other box here. So you are in the room to talk about Rails. So thanks, but I already switched it off. And I have a old G4 iBook on top of it I travel with, so it's probably even wrong, but I appreciate the offer. I'm gonna talk about Rails. That's what I'm gonna be talking about. So if you really just wanna focus on Cold Fusion, you know, head next door to one of the talks. And I'm gonna try my best to not be too big of a Rails fanboy, because I think there's a lot of things you can learn from any framework. How many people here have worked in anything other than Cold Fusion? Okay, so lots of people, right? So anyone used a Java framework, Struts, Tapestry, Hibernate's a model framework, obviously, but Spring, AppFuse, I mean, there's a ton of them in the Java world. Or any Django people in here using Python? Yeah, no, I didn't think so. There's a ton of PHP frameworks. Of course, Fusebox runs on PHP. There's Cake. There's Angel. There's just more than, especially in that world, than you can keep track of. And the thing I think that's interesting about all those things is that looking at how other people solve the same problem is a good way to figure out how to solve problems yourself, whether you're doing the same problem domain or not. And probably the best example of that is Model View Controller. I mean, regardless of what language we develop in and the details of the web application, Model View Controller is usually the way you design an app. I mean, that's just kind of a standard, and people came to the right answer from a lot of different directions, and the details of each implementation are a little different. But in general, the answer is the same everywhere. And one of the reasons it's the same, you know, let's go back to first principles. Why do you build a web app? You've got a problem to solve. You know, probably a customer's problem, an internal customer, an external customer. But you want to solve a problem. And, you know, we all know the old hoary, what makes a web app better? Well, you know, good, fast, cheap, choose to, right? That's the kind of standard mantra in web development. So you want good and fast and cheap, hopefully all three, preferably at least two of those things. That's why we all build web apps, or at least I think that's why we're all building web apps. And you know, a lot of us have chosen Cold Fusion because we think it lets us build apps good, fast, and cheap. And that's a totally true statement. So if you think about it, a holy grail for a web app is building, you know, is an application that you can build that solves a problem better, faster, and cheaper than anyone else. I mean, if you are, this isn't true for like if you're in an organization developing all the time as much, but if you're a consultancy or you're an independent developer or something like that, your job is to be able to be better, faster, and cheaper than everybody else. Otherwise, you're not going to get the job. Someone else is going to get the job. So being better, faster, and cheaper, solving a problem and solving it correctly, is really what you're after at the end of the day. And even if you've got internal clients, if you're not good, fast, and inexpensive, relatively speaking, solving internal problems, eventually you're going to get replaced with someone who will, or eventually something will be bought externally to be cheaper than you are. But so the point is, good, fast, cheap. You know, that's what we all try to do. We want to be successful in building a web app. So what makes a web app successful? What are some general rules? What can you learn about it? Well, following standards is a good start. You know, we all follow certain standards, whether they're very specific standards, like how to name fuses in Fusebox, DSP underscore, or whatever, or whether it's a higher level standard, you know, like where the curly braces go, which is a really important thing for some of the Java programmers, or whether it's something, you know, even higher level, you know, following like MVC, which is sort of industry standard for building web apps. And that kind of ties into the next one, using best practices. Best practices are called that for a reason, because they've been proven to be best over time. You know, reinventing the wheel, as an aside, something the Cold Fusion community as a whole has done more than once. Reinventing the wheel is sort of silly. You know, after enough people figure out how to do something, you know, and they all say, hey, I'm doing good, fast, cheap applications using this technique, well, that usually becomes expressed in a best practice, whether that's using source control, doing testing, having a development, integration, and deployment environment so you're not building on the test server. You know, just all the things that we do that have become best practices. They came best practices because a lot of people developed independently these practices. They all figured out, hey, it solves the same problem, addresses the same problem. Maybe we should say, hey, this is best practice because it works for me and it's going to work for you. If we want to deliver applications good, fast, and cheap, reducing, reusing, and recycling code are all good. If you reduce code, there's less place for an error to happen. If you reuse code, you get more code and tested code, hopefully, faster because it's already there. And recycling code is a good way to reduce the amount of time and the effort you have to spend building anything. And one of the best ways to recycle code is to find something else that someone built that solves your problem, that enough people are using that you know that it's standard enough. For instance, picking a framework. For instance, picking a DAO library or a norm library like Transfer or Reactor. And you've probably seen a lot of that stuff here, reducing, reusing, and recycling code. Another thing for web apps is quality and consistency. Again, picking a framework that you can use over and over and over is a good thing to do because you know that you're going to be consistent and that if you fix a problem in the framework, it's going to be fixed across all the instances of that framework. And when you have a large community building something like Fusebox, that leverages the work of lots of people. And a more modern thing to deal with web applications is gracefully responding to change, you know, getting away from the idea that the 600-page specification describes the application, you know, more of the agile development, embracing change, knowing change is going to happen, and being able to respond to that. So those are all sort of general keys to a successful web application, which leads me into why Rails is so hot. And I'm going to be really specific. Rails is a framework. Ruby is a language, much like Fusebox is a framework and Cold Fusion is a language. You can also use PHP for Fusebox. Fusebox is a framework. PHP or Cold Fusion is a language that runs that framework. Believe it or not, there are other web application frameworks that use Ruby. Can anyone name one? You know, I mean, I'm sure lots of you have heard of Rails, at least some hype. You know, it's a web application framework for Ruby. There's one called Nitro. And it's got an ORM layer called OGG, and some people think it's better than Active Record built into Rails. But anyhow, point being, Rails is hot. And whether it's hype or not, there's things we can learn from it. And what makes Rails really hot, it's not as revolutionary as they would have you believe. What happened is Rails is evolutionary and smart. It's very evolutionary in the, here's a bunch of best practices. Not only are we going to identify them, we're going to bake them right in. You're going to use Model View Controller whether you like it or not, because that's a best practice and that's how Rails works. And if you want to do something else, you can, but it'll be hard. It'll be harder. It won't be as easy. I'm going to encourage that best practice. When I generate a controller, I'm going to go ahead and generate all the boilerplate for tests for that, because you should be testing, and I'm even going to the trouble of generating it for you. And this is one you might not know if you haven't. I should ask, how many people have actually played with Rails, actually done more than watch the podcast and screencast? So just a few people. The testing's baked in. When you create Rails applications from the command line, when you have to occasionally use the command line in Rails, it'll even automatically put it into Subversion for you if you're running Subversion. It knows that you're probably using Subversion. They think Subversion's a best practice. And it's got support for Subversion built into the things that generate the code artifacts that it's building for you, so you don't have to do it. So anyhow, point being, it integrates and encourages best practices. That's one reason Rails hot, and it's really true. It's inherently agile. If you are in the agile school of web development as a methodology, any of the varying implementations of that, whether you're thinking about agile with a capital A, or you're thinking extreme programming, test-driven development, if you're a Scrum proponent, any of these methodologies that are agile, Rails really maps well to those. Rails also keeps the framework out of the way. And this is one thing, you know, that you may find, especially if you're new to frameworks and you're starting to work with Fusebox, or you're starting to work with Model Glue, you're like, geez, look at all the configuration I have to do. Or God forbid you're using struts for Java or something like that. It's like, wow, I have to, you know, the term's feeding the framework. You know, as a developer, you use a framework to save time, but then you spend all your time programming to the framework. And if you've ever had to use something that's a programming platform, you know, like a CRM system or Drupal for community-based stuff, or a content management system or Spectra, you know, something where you spend most of your time programming towards the application or the framework as opposed to building your own application. So Rails is hot because it keeps the framework out of the way. And one way it does that is convention over configuration. It assumes you're going to do things a certain way, and if you follow the rules, it works. And if you don't follow it, you have to do some more of that configuration, and the framework gets more in your way. Another reason Rails is hot is it's self-contained. It comes, much like Cold Fusion, with everything from the web server to the testing framework. Everything is there in one container. And probably the two of the more important things, especially from my perspective, Rails was extracted from a real life app. It wasn't I need a framework and I'm a framework researcher and I will build a framework. That's not how it happened. It happened because wow, I need something that I can, you know, build these commercial apps that I'm going to do, the big example being Basecamp from 37 Signals, the folks that built Rails. And David, the guy who one person responsible for Rails, much like one person's responsible for MotoGlue for the most part, and one person's responsible for Fusebox at different people at various times. It was extracted from a real-life application, and he had 10 hours a week to work on his project. So he was like, I need something that's going to, you know, not require, you know, 8 of my hours to be configuring the framework and, you know, 7 of my hours being, you know, DAO access and all this stuff. I want something that's going to save me time. So it was extracted from a real-life application. They took an application they built and then pulled out what worked and kind of universalized it, made it a little more flexible for their next app. And for me specifically, I'm a very big proponent of open source software. And all frameworks pretty much that anyone talks about are open source. So that's not a shock. Why should you care? This is really important. Rails will eat you for breakfast if you're not careful, because they had to do every argument we've been making for why you don't use Java and you use ColdFusion instead for years, because it's easy to use, it's fast, it's flexible, everything's built in, it doesn't cost a lot of money, and I'm going to be done with one or two developers faster than you can find 5 J2EE engineers to hire. You know, I mean, that's an argument that's been made a lot for ColdFusion, because it hits, and Rails really hits that sweet spot. Technically, Django and Python hit that sweet spot. How many Python programmers do we have? You know, I mean, the ones that are out there all work for Google if they're really, really, really good, because Google is a big proponent of Python. You know, there's not a lot there. And there weren't many Ruby programmers 10 years ago. But Ruby, much like the argument for ColdFusion, is easy to learn. It's a fairly low barrier, especially for Java people. And the Java people at the higher end who got frustrated with things like struts and wrote Tapestry and then got frustrated with that and wrote things like Spring, they finally just said, forget all that garbage, we're doing Ruby. So there's a lot of really active development in Ruby from really, really smart people. So the Java developers that you used to be able to eat for lunch, because you're like, oh, I can build this in ColdFusion, and I'll do it faster and cheaper and better. That's what you want, right? Well, now they're learning Rails, so they're going to be able to compete again. And there's a lot of momentum around it. I mean, CEOs, COOs, CIOs, whether you know they're technical or not, they've heard about Rails. I mean, it was on the cover of Business 2.0. David got named one of the top 20 or 30 or 40 tech entrepreneurs in the world in one of the Fortune magazine or one of those business magazines I don't keep track of. But he's getting a lot of publicity, and the hype is something. So you have to fight against the hype, because in the ColdFusion world, we're always fighting an uphill battle. Well, let's do it in ColdFusion. Well, you know, I know Java and I know .NET. What's this ColdFusion stuff? Oh, well, it is Java. You know, I mean, we've had to do these arguments forever. Now Rails is up there, you know, and probably more people recognize that word than ColdFusion anymore, and more people recognize Ruby. So anyhow, that's the end of the epistle right there. I'm going to stop, you know, lecturing about why Rails is great and talk about what we can learn from Rails. Because Ruby and ColdFusion have a lot of similarities. They're scripting oriented in the sense that, you know, they don't come from, they're scripting oriented. I'll just leave it at that. And Ruby and ColdFusion are both very dynamic. You can do duck typing. It's not static typing like Java is. It's not all that complexity. It's lightweight, a lot like ColdFusion's always been. And Rails, the framework, is very similar to a lot of the ColdFusion frameworks because it's built for web applications, it's model view controller, and it's got built-in ORM, object relational mapping layers. So whether you choose transfer or reactor on the ColdFusion side, or roll your own or one of the other ones, but let's say transfer and reactor are your two choices, just as a ColdFusion framework can bundle that, Rails bundles its object relational mapping tool into it, the active record part of it. So let's look at what Rails are, because Rails is this big thing, you know, this big cohesive thing. There's lots of pieces of it. There's a lot of pieces of it that we can learn from. Active record is the object relational mapping part, and for my money, that is the single best part of Rails. Rails has an incredibly functional object request mapper or object relational mapper that you don't have to worry about. It makes the database invisible, and I'm going to make that argument a couple of times. If you haven't ever used Rails, and even if you haven't seen migrations, which is in Rails 1.2, migrations handles solving the problem of how do you keep your database up to date, you know, as you're moving your code along, and how do you ensure that when you it basically gives you a way to version your database. It gives you a way to build your database programmatically while you're agilely developing without having to have big SQL scripts and keep track of all these things. So Active Record handles the database. Action Pack is the controller in the view layer. So it's handling all the controlling, all of the viewing, and that's kind of the equivalent of what a lot of the value is in Fusebox. So you could take fuse box, for instance, you could tack on transfer a reactor, and you could get these two parts, active record and action pack. It'd be a very similar sort of stack. Action mailer's built in. It's dealing with mail. It's basically a mail templating sort of thing, sort of like using Cold Fusion for ZF mail. It's about this much of Rails. Active support is a bunch of the equivalent of Cold Fusion user-defined functions. It's a lot of syntax sugar to make things easier. And just does a lot with adding new functions to strings, adding new functions to numbers so you can format them easier, so you can do math on them easier, so you can just do a lot of things simpler. So it's basically like having a really good UDF library. Rake is a build tool. It's derived from Make, you know, like the C++ Make. And in Cold Fusion world, Ant would be the equivalent. But Rake is built right in, and Rails understands a lot about building, deploying, and testing. It assumes you've got source control. It assumes you're going to do automated building. It assumes you're going to do testing. So we've got all these different pieces. Then we've got still more. You know, for all the sexy Web 2.0 stuff, they built Ajax right in. And like I was sort of alluding to earlier, they chose some conventions. They said, you know, instead of you having to figure out whether you want to use Dojo or you want to use Spry or you want to use Prototype or whatever, we're going to use Prototype. We don't care what you think. You can use something else, but Prototype's built in. You know, and we also built in Scriptalicious, and then we added this thing somewhere in the 1.1 to 1.2 branch called RJS, which is just is a Ruby way to generate JavaScript responses. It just makes it even easier to do do Ajax-oriented applications if that's important to you. On top of that, we have generators, which are what they sound like. They're actual code generators. They're scripts to generate all the various parts of the model so you don't have to type them by hand. It's the equivalent, like in Fusebox, of being able to say, generate circuit, and it generates my circuit, and it puts the entry in the fusebox.xml, and it builds, you know, the right subdirectories under controller and model and view. It does all those things that you have to do by hand, but it just scripts them so your life's easier. It's also got a pretty extensive plugin architecture so people can drop in their own plugins for doing different things. And then it's got two separate application servers built in. It's got this older one called Webbrick. It's got one called Mongrel. It's built out of the box to support Lighty and Apache. So basically, you drop your Rails app onto usually a Linux box, and it's going to run. You can certainly use it just fine on Windows, too, but it's got everything built in. It's got the servers, the plugins. It generates stuff for you. It solved Ajax. It's got a deployment tool and a build tool. It's got lots of syntax sugar for making your life easy. It handles mail. It handles model view controller, and it makes your life easier with managing databases with migration. So it's got all the pack. Cold Fusion has all those. They're just separated. And as I said at the beginning, Rails wasn't revolutionary. It was evolutionary. It took a lot of good ideas and just put them together. And just the fact that they did that made it a lot more revolutionary than it should be. So Rails is really simple to use. And I had all the demos set up on my Mac, and now I'm seeing. Just a sidebar, for whatever reason, I do all my Rails development on a Mac, and I come back to the PC when I'm doing Cold Fusion and obviously SQL Server and stuff like that. So I've got this very big mental separation between the different kinds of work I've been doing. But so there's not a lot to doing a Rails application. And you know, if you've seen the video about how easy Rails is, or if you try one of the getting started with Rails blog post or something, it takes about like 30 seconds, literally, after you're downloading before you're running a little Rails app. Then it gets a lot more complicated as you learn how to use Rails, just like anything else. But I want to go through the different parts of Rails, figure out what we can learn from them. Active record, for my money, is the single best part of Rails. It's a great ORM, object relational mapper. And if you do a lot of web database applications, you know the database is the most annoying code to deal with. It's the most tedious code to write. It's hard to configure. What makes it so good? Well, it's got built-in CRUD. Well, we got that in a lot of the Cold Fusion world. It has hooks for validation. It has hooks for filters. It's got 16 different places that it can call back. So, you know, it can do things before save, after save, before create, after create, before successful save, on the unsuccessful save. There's all these different callbacks it's got. It supports transactions. And when I say supports transactions, I don't mean it supports transactions in the database, but it supports transactions at the object level. So if you're doing several operations with an object, some of which are database and some of which are not, Rails' object relational mapping layer, the active record, is smart enough to be able to roll back the whole process, which is kind of cool. It's rarely something you use a lot. I mean, how often are you writing to two different databases and then saving out an XML file and writing to a web service? But you can roll that stuff back because active record is an object relational mapper focus on the object, and it just happens to map it to the relational database under the hood. Plus, it's got observers, which lets you hook in for logging these things. For it just be an observer is effectively a way to have a little chunk of code that executes when it sees certain things happen on Active Record. And the sexiest thing for my mind and fairly new to Rails is this migration stuff, which is basically a way to use Ruby code to script your database, which is not rocket science. I mean, you can script it with Java, you can script it with anything like that, but it's just got a way to keep your database in sync with all of your development. And when you're doing agile development and the database is changing and you're adding new fields and all that, there's no configuration. And I can version everything really easy. So Active Record's cool. But here's the important stuff from it. Active Record makes the database invisible, and that's something any framework dealing with the model should think about doing, because how many people like writing CRUD SQL, the create, I mean, is that an enjoyable part? I mean, maybe you enjoy, I was going to say, do you enjoy writing SQL? But, you know, I can understand how it's cool to write really slick SQL that does something really cool. I mean, sometimes SQL can be cool. It does really neat things. But the tedious, annoying stuff, no one wants to do that. The database should be invisible. You shouldn't have to know what the database is. You shouldn't have to configure it 15 different places. You shouldn't have to worry, oh, I changed that field from a var char to a text field, or I changed it from a int to a big int. You shouldn't have to keep going back and modifying stuff all the time, or you're spending your time feeding your framework. You're not spending your time solving your problem. So Rails has a couple of things. It's got conventions. It assumes your naming tables a certain way. It assumes your naming keys a certain way. It's got magic columns. Some of them are simple. If it sees one called created at or updated at, it knows that that's going to be a timestamp, and it knows it's going to update that every time that it does a save without you having to write any code to do that. That's just a little sugar. But it's also got really fancy magic column names. It's got one called type, which implements single table inheritance, which is if you've got a lot of very similar objects with just a few differences, like let's say you've got a library application, you've got books and articles and, you know, very similar objects, almost all the fields are the same, just a couple different, and maybe you'd implement it as a base class with some inheritance or something like that. Single table inheritance takes care of that, but it puts it all in one database table and magically figures out, you know, when you say it's a book, that, oh, you really want a book back. And it's all handled in the object relational mapping level, and it's all because we're adding a single column called type, and Rails knows what to do with it. It's a magic column. So it's making the database invisible. I don't have to think about the database. The migrations, I'm just makes life so much easier, because you don't have to even go into the database to change your development. If you're using MySQL and you suddenly switch over to SQL Server, all of your migrations still work because they were written in Ruby, just like they'd work if they were in JDBC. They're just going to, you know, you change the connector. You're changing to a SQL Server database instead of a MySQL database, and now you can build your database using the same migrations that you were using before. And then Active Record adds a little sugar. It has all sorts of relationship stuff. It's got, you know, one-to-many, many-to-many. It's got one-to-one relationships. And then it's got this crazy access sugar where you can take a record and you can say it acts as a tree. So it manages all the tree relationships for you. So you don't have to implement all the tree handling code if you want to store data like a tree or a couple of other things like that. So there's a lot of sugar in there to make your life easy, to make the database invisible. Pretty much when you're building a Rails app, the only thing you have to do is go in and say, you know, like let's say MySQL. You go into MySQL, you say, create database name. That's the last time I actually have to open up MySQL and do anything. Everything else I can do all from inside my Rails and Ruby code, all managed with the rake tools, all managed with the environment that I'm working in without having to switch between all these tools. It's making the database invisible. It's making my life easier. It's letting me solve things faster and cheaper and potentially better. So it's got routing that's really sophisticated. So basically, it's got something sort of like mod rewrite built in, except it does it in Ruby. And it saves you having to do it in Apache, and it lets you use it on any supported platform because it's done in the Ruby code instead of being done at the web layer, which has its pluses and minuses. It's got this thing called the Flash, which is a just quick scratch pad for putting all those error messages and stuff. You don't have to write any code to deal with that. You just throw it in the Flash, and you know the Flash is only around for one page, which is what an error message needs to be. So you put your warning in the Flash. You put your error in the Flash. You put this page was just created. Your user was just registered. You put that stuff in the Flash. It makes life easy. That was really, by the way, easy to implement in ColdFusion as a CFC. I did that as a CFC just for fun. And the only hard part about it is you can't call it Flash because that causes all sorts of trouble in ColdFusion. I think I called it the bucket when I did it because, you know, you just throw stuff in the bucket. But, you know, that sidebar is fairly trivial, but the point is, you know, I saw something I liked in Rails, and I was like, you know, I'd use this. And so I, you know, spent a little time writing it. It wasn't a lot of code. I got an idea from looking at Rails that I implemented in Cold Fusion application. So the controller has before, after, and around filters, which are really cool for taking an action and making sure something executes before it, after it, or before and after it. That's what an around does. It's got caching built in and cookie and session management built in. Again, none of this stuff isn't things that Java can't do and that Cold Fusion can't do and Python or whatever can't do. They just put it together in a really clean, integrated, simple to use package. So has anyone worked with REST approaches to web service representational state transfer? Has anyone worked with the more SOAP and XML RPC and that kind of stuff? Yeah, which one do you like better? REST, yeah. And the Rails guys are really going hardcore down the REST path. They actually were going to deprecate all of their web service layer that was written because they like RESTful routes. And it's RESTful routes just pay attention to the verbs that are already built into web applications. They know that gets are sort of like a select, and they know that posts are, you know, doing some sort of action. There's actually a delete method built into HTTP, and they just take advantage of all those verbs to act on a noun, you know, and the noun is usually an object in the model, and it just makes some kinds of code very easy, and it makes exposing simple web services so trivial, it's not even funny. That's not a Rails-specific thing. Anything can do REST. REST is sort of a technique, much like Model View Controller is a technique, but they just built REST into the latest release of Ruby and Rails, and it's really nice. So we've got a really good model layer. We've got a really good controller label layer. Now we're going to talk about the view real quick. The views are like templates. Here's where you win pretty quickly over Ruby when you're doing Cold Fusion in some ways. RHTML embedded Ruby, which is sort of the vanilla way you do Ruby apps, looks exactly like JSP 1.0, you know, in ASP 1.0. You know, you've got like brackets, percent sign, equal, blah, 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 everywhere you want it. And that's just tedious and annoying. And, you know, Java people hated it when JSP did that and came up with better solutions. And there are other solutions. There's pluggable templates for Ruby. You can use all sorts of different templates. But anyhow, embedded Ruby is how you do most of it, which is exactly, you know, it's no different and no harder for any developers to use than it would be to do Cold Fusion. And you just, instead of pound signs, you just replace it with angle brackets and percents. It's got an XML-based builder, which you can use not only to write a file to XML, but also to generate voice XML or to generate any other XML language that's really pretty trivial to write. Again, nothing Cold Fusion can't do. It's got this Ajax templates, which CF Ajax kind of handles, I guess. But it just makes it really easy to work with Ajax responses. So it's got all these different kinds of templates. There's at least five more templating languages I can think of off the top of my head people have built into Rails for using an action view. It's got helpers for dealing with paging through record sets, for dealing with forms and fields and formatting. It's got layouts abstracted, much like Fusebox has layouts abstracted, especially if you're using CCV sort of style Fusebox stuff. And it's got partials and components, which are, well, I should cross out components because no one in Rails uses components. It's officially deprecated. But partials are basically like CCVs as well. Partials and layouts together are sort of like CCVs in Fusebox. I don't even remember what CCV stands for. Content something variables. Yeah, I use them. I just don't remember. So other cool stuff. Fixtures in YAML. YAML is basically XML without any angle brackets, which a lot of people like. You know, it's insane. It's insane. But fixtures are ways to push data in. Fixtures in YAML basically let you use YAML as an alternative CSV for loading data in and out of databases or in and out of your application. Here's one thing that I will break down and cry with joy when Cold Fusion adds, which is some sort of support for the vendor directory. Basically, I can install the Rails version that I need in a subdirectory of my application, so it's there. Just like it would be nice to drop my Fusebox or my model glue or my other things like that into the vendor directory and have those override the one that's configured as far as the mappings go. I'd really like application level mappings in Cold Fusion. Not that anyone here has any effect over that. But anyhow, the vendor directory makes life happy for me. in Rails. It lets you put the pieces of code that you might be able to install across the whole application. You can put your own specific version. So if you've got Rails 1.1, 1.2, 1.2.1, 1.2.1, yeah, that's the right one. If you've got different apps in all those, you don't have to worry whether the server has the generally installed version or not. It comes right along with you. You can do that with the Fusebox core files, obviously, by just dropping those into the root directory of your app and moving them along. But anyhow, the plugins are ways people package up functionality, and there are a lot of cool plugins for Rails. Some are as simple as things that make it easier to dump things out of the database and put things into the database. Some of them are more interesting, like they generate login sequences, so you don't have to do any of your login application because you do that over and over and over, and people wrote it and packed it up as a plugin. One of them called Streamlined takes the scaffolding that's built into Rails, which is one of its big features that just basically gives you CRUD, including the visuals right away, but they bonded it to the Yahoo widget GUI toolkit, whatever Yahoo's toolkit is for really pretty UIs. And so you just go, you know, you just go script, Ruby script runner, streamlined, and give it the model name, and it just builds a GUI for you using the Google toolkit. It's really pretty. That's the kind of stuff that's good, fast, cheap, right? You know, you get that stuff out there, and you can focus on the harder parts of it. Capistrano is a kick-butt deployment tool. And you're going to be seeing more about Capistrano because while it's written in Ruby, just like Ant is a Java application, it doesn't matter. You can use it to deploy anything. And I am eagerly starting to do some work using Capistrano for Cold Fusion deployment, but not enough to make it worth showing yet. Capistrano is just a really good tool for deploying, versioning, building applications. And here's the thing to truly be scared of as a Cold Fusion developer, just to keep in the back of your mind. JRuby. JRuby is exactly what it sounds like. It's the Java version of Ruby. There's a Java version of Python. Is anyone scared by that, that they could run Django in a Python container on a Cold Fusion server, and no one cares. One of Cold Fusion's huge strengths right now is if you've got to do Java integration, you can talk to Java objects directly, and you know at some point .NET objects as well, but you can talk to Java objects directly in Cold Fusion. That's great. Well, Ruby you can't right now. You have to do some sort of resty web service back and forth. But JRuby lets you do it. And the interesting thing about JRuby runs Ruby really well inside of a Java container. But Rails uses right up to the edge of what's possible with Ruby, and Rails doesn't run so well in JRuby. It runs maybe 80%, 90%. There's a ton of test cases that fail, and they know it. But what did Sun do? Sun hired the two guys that were writing JRuby, and Sun's paying them to work on JRuby full time because Sun wants to deploy their servers being able to run Java, Python, and Ruby all in the same container. And that's pretty cool. There's, you know, that JSR for running scripting languages inside of Java. JSR, it's not 170, that's content management. There's a JSR for running scripting languages in Java containers. You know, the Ruby folks know that integrating with Java is important because a lot of them used to be Java people, and they still do a lot of Java. And, you know, that's one place where Ruby still fails. I'm working on an app right now that uses a Java search engine on the back end. It uses Solr, which is a wrapper for Lucene from the Apache project. And we just have to throw messages back and forth between the servers. It would be a lot nicer if we could integrate with the object directly in Lucene, but we can't until JRuby's a little more stable. So, what to learn from this? Well, Rails lessons for web frameworks, Cold Fusion frameworks in specific, best practices are best. I mean, you know, there's a reason they're called a best practice as opposed to a practice. You know, I mean, it's the same reason that bad practices are called bad practices, because they're bad. So, Rails took a bunch of best practices, not just a few, a bunch of them, and put them all together in one easy-to-use package. You know, a lot of us say, boy, it would be nice if I had the time to install source control and a lot of time to do test-driven development and the time to do this and write my Ant task. Well, David was a single developer. You know, I talk about him like he's Jesus. He's not. David was a single developer. He had limited time, and he's like, you know, I'm going to invest some time in putting this stuff all together because it's going to save me time. You know, that's why I use a framework. You know, no offense to Simon, but I would rather use Sean's energy, and before that, John's energy, and before that, Steve and Gabe and Craig and Hal's energy and everyone who built Fusebox, for instance, then spend the time on it myself, because I really don't care about building frameworks. I'm not interested. It's not my core competency. I'd rather solve a problem and build an application. And, you know, I'm being a little facetious because I'm very happy to contribute and to evangelize and to use Fusebox. I've used Fusebox despite me talking about Rails. I've put a lot of apps under Fusebox over the past 7 years. So best practices are best. I mean, that's one thing to learn from the web framework. Look at what other frameworks are doing. Look at how people are solving the same problem the same way over and over and over again. You might not agree that Prototype is the best Ajax library, but you know an Ajax library is important. And, you know, instead of analysis paralysis, which one of these things is the best one to choose? Choose one. You know, and integrate it into your framework. You know, whether it's an explicit framework like Fusebox or it's your corporate framework where you pulled Fusebox in and transfer in and all that, make a decision. You know, analysis paralysis really causes trouble. And, you know, like it or not, personally, I like doing my my variable names in camel case because I did Java for a long time, and I hate plural table names. But I unlearned that for Rails because it was easier for me to unlearn it and save the time than to argue about it. And, you know, so like it or not, I changed, you know, to fit the tool because it didn't really matter. It wasn't important where the angle brace goes. It's not important whether it's ID or person ID or person underscore ID or capital P or sin capital ID. It's not important. My job was to solve, you know, bigger problems than arguing over what the convention is. So best practices are best. Making the database invisible, I think this is the single biggest key to building web applications. The more time you spend fighting with the databases, the more time you're solving problems you don't have to worry. How many people know how databases work under the hood, know how a B-tree works, know how, yeah, okay. Not a lot of people, you know? And honestly, why do you care, you know, unless you're a database developer? Because you're not doing it. I mean, you should be able to do SQL competently, you know, especially, but, you know, you just don't need to know the difference between a B-tree and an R-tree, you know, and the difference versus a clustered index and a non-clustered index and a primary key index and, you know, the difference between NODB and MyISAM and Falcon and all these things in MySQL. You just don't need to know most of the time. You want it to be invisible, especially because it's all different if you change to Oracle or to DB2 or to Postgres. You know, so there went all your knowledge, you know, that was useful. You're starting again. Me, I'd rather spend my time letting the ORM write it to the database and not getting too worried about it and just getting the problem solved. So making the database invisible is probably the single best thing you can do. And if, as you're thinking in your corporation or your consultancy or your personal practice, figuring out a way you can make the database more invisible, like for instance using Transfer or Reactor, probably is going to save you a fair bit of time compared to writing SQL by hand. I mean, that would be my best bet. And so something like that is a really smart idea to make the database more invisible. Because that ties into number three, easy things should be easy. You know, and the easier you make the easy things, great. Deployment, how many people think deployment is scary? You know, like your corporation is like, oh, it's deployment night. You know, everybody, you know. Deployment shouldn't be scary. You know, you built the app. You know, how much harder should it be to deploy it? You deploy it all the time. You install it on your box, you install it on someone else's box, you test it, you know, your box catches on fire, you get a new hard drive, you install it. It shouldn't be hard to do these things. If it is hard, you know, you have to ask yourself, why is this hard? Now, I'm not talking about we have to get on the VPN and we have to, I mean, there are some things like that, but that's not really related to the rest of, you know, the, oh my gosh, I hope our deployment works. You know, that's a bad place to be because it makes deployment scary. Deployment shouldn't be scary. It should be easy. It should be just as easy. You know, testing the latest development release should be no scarier than testing the latest production release and vice versa. I'm kind of pounding on deployment there, but because that's one of the things that, you know, there's not a lot of good solutions in ColdFusion that people have done. You know, Ant or something automated, you know, something automated repeatable scripting makes it easy. But any easy thing should be easy. It shouldn't be hard to do your model view controller. You know, I mean, personally, I get frustrated sometimes with Fusebox because I'm open in CF Eclipse and I've got 15 different circuit XML files open and they all say circuit.xml. And, you know, I'm like, okay, I know I need to change this and I'm flipping through, I'm trying to find the right one. And, you know, that it's easier than figuring out a framework by hand, you know, if I was doing the SAM stuff that Simon does. But, you know, sometimes, you know, it's frustrating because it seems like it should be easier. And I honestly find that's true now that I'm going back a lot more from Rails to ColdFusion. Sometimes like, oh, this could be so much easier. The other thing to pull out is testing is crucial because Rails builds testing in at every single level. One thing it does, the Rails release itself has hundreds of tests built into the release of the framework. So for instance, this is a true story. I've been working on an app for about 6 months, and Rails has been in a lot of flux as it's moved from version 1.1 to 1.2, which is a bigger release than that sounds like. I've been on what's called Rails Edge, which is basically we hooked our Rails core files into the Subversion trunk of the guys building Rails. Because we wanted some of the newer features. And so 3, 4, 5 times a day, core files are changing. And there's hundreds of core files. But you know what? All the tests pass. You know, and because all the tests pass, I know with a high degree of confidence they haven't broken anything I'm already using. And I also knew that, you know, I was going to deploy on version 1.2 because the deployment is about a month away. Rails 1.2 was released about 3 weeks ago. So we knew we were going to deploy on 1.2. We knew we wanted a couple of the cutting edge features. But I didn't have to be afraid of whether the framework was good or bad because I could test the framework because the framework itself has all the tests built in. So that's one aspect of it. But another aspect is Rails really tries hard to generate all your tests for you. It still doesn't make you put any code in the test files, but they're there. You know, basically, the test harness, which is what we talk about in ColdFusion, is automatically generated. It is sitting right there, staring at you, making you feel guilty that it's empty. You know, and so, you know, maybe you can still ignore it, and that's fine. You know, that's fine. But it's there, you know, and that's one less impediment. Plus, the code to run it is there. You know, I don't have to think, oh, CF unit, CFC unit, one. It's all there. You know, I don't have to think. I just have to say, you know, I should be doing testing. It gave it to me. Didn't have to do 15 separate file creations to get, you know, my model view and controller all set up for this. So maybe I do have 5 minutes to write a couple of simple tests. And then, you know, you sort of get moving in that. But so one of Rails' lessons is that testing is crucial, whether it's of the framework itself or of the code you're building. And, you know, making easy things easy, Rails makes testing easy. Rails makes the database easy. But these are all things that we can learn in ColdFusion frameworks. I mean, I know the ColdFusion frameworks all are chock full of XML, and you know that didn't used to bother me, but it tends to bother me more and more. And I think a lot of that is because it came straight from the Java world. You know, all the Java frameworks have huge XML configuration files. One of the things the Java world tends to have, the ColdFusion world doesn't tend to have, is code generation and XML generation and synchronization tools and all that, which make your life a little easier because the Java people got frustrated with writing all the XML. So they've had more people with more opportunity to write more tools to do that. But, you know, now they don't really care because those people who wrote those tools are now doing Rails. But so more convention and less configuration, that always makes life help. So, you know, if you're responsible or you're working on a framework or you're building your own framework or you have the opportunity to contribute to a framework, moving towards convention over configuration can certainly make things easy. It spends less time feeding the framework, more time solving your problem. Picking a ORM and integrating it, why write database code to save product to the database, save user to the base? Why do that? Why put yourself through that pain? It's worth the time to learn transfer or Reactor, or potentially to write your own if that's really what you want to do, but just then it's done, you know, and you don't have to worry. Personally, I like to leverage other people's work if it's, you know, a good, solid, capable work, which both Reactor and Transfer are. Pick one. You know, same thing with Ajax. Pick one. You know, I mean, Dojo, this, that, the other. Pick one, you know, and then put it into your framework. You know, whether it's the, you know, I'm not suggesting that Fusebox should suddenly choose Prototype, right? But I am suggesting that if you're using Fusebox and you're using Transfer and you're thinking about Ajax, just pick one and use it, you know, and that is now part of your all's corporate framework or your company's framework or your application's framework. I missed this little minor point, a migrations library for ColdFusion. Migrations are really rocking people even in the Rails world as far as how much easier it makes. Wouldn't you like to be able to script your database in ColdFusion, you know, or Java, so you don't have to worry about it? So if you decide to add a field, you just add another migration, it becomes migration 15 because you already had 14 migrations, and it just adds a field, you know. And then the nice thing about migrations is it has a method up and a method down. So up takes your database upwards, you know, from version 12 to 13 to 14 to 15. Down takes it back. Let's say, oh, you know, that field shouldn't have been there. I'm going to migrate back down. Well, you've got all the track of all those things, and it's all hooked into your source control because it's right there under your application. And if you get your application and you check it out, you do rake migrate DB or rake DB migrate, and it gets the database automatically to the point where it is for everybody else at that version of the application, including pushing data into it if you want it to push data into it. That's a good way to get your team member up and running, to have the database be invisible, and to focus on solving your problem, making, you know, the easy things easy. It shouldn't be hard to get your database configured. So Anyhow, pick a testing library and integrate it. You know, whether you're using CF Unit or CFC Unit, I lean a little more towards CF Unit. And in the Cold Fusion world, so much of the code, especially if you're not using CFCs, is really hard to test. So I'll editorialize here. Unit testing can be really hard in that environment. Maybe use Selenium, which is more functional testing at the website. But that's how you're testing anyhow, right? You're sitting there, you're clicking, I'm going to register a user, click. You know, I'm going to log in, click. Let Selenium automate that stuff. That's not as good as unit testing because it's testing, you know, kind of at the whole page or the whole fuse action or at the whole view level or whatever. But it's better than nothing, and it saves you time. It makes easier things easy. Now you don't have to keep typing in the 60 required fields in the registration page every time. You automate that with Selenium and just do it. If you are using CFCs, please look at CFC Unit and start looking at unit testing your code. Good way to get started there is if you're doing new development, start from the beginning. If you're doing old development, start by wrapping up your bugs and test cases to demonstrate them. Yes, Sean? Yay! So the AND integration came about it. Super. So you even have less excuse not to use it because you can run it automatically in Eclipse. Paul is a great guy, did a nice job of CFC Unit. If you're scared about unit testing and you're like, oh, where will I find a book? Of course, there is not a book on CFC Unit. Why would there be? I mean, the market's not big enough. But what there is a book on JUnit if you're comfortable with Java. And there's also a book on InUnit if you're more comfortable with .NET. Hang on 1 second. And Paul originally basically did a line-for-line port of JUnit into CFC Unit. So the book, if you just squint your eyes and put angle bracket CF in front of everything, is pretty much exactly the same. So I'm sorry, sir. Yes?
I think there's a recording on Charlie, the website on CFC Unit.
Yeah. That's a good point, too. Yeah. Yeah, and you know, Paul, now that, you know, he's getting to be Sean's testing Nazi, you know, that's, you know, pushing CFC Unit a little further, and it's not knocking anything about CF Unit, but the point is, you know, picking a testing framework and dealing with it. I mean, just pick one and do the test. Don't worry about, you know, don't be scared. You can't mess them up. You know, this is a Rails thing. Tons of Rails involves going to the command line and typing something that's a script, and it's going to generate stuff. Oh, my God! Well, I didn't mean to be so loud. But, you know, we tend not to do that in Cold Fusion because there's no freaking command line language in Cold Fusion. What do you write it in? You know, you can't really write Cold Fusion at the command line, really. I mean, you can do crazy stuff. But so pick another language that you know. Java's a good default, and it makes it easier to write ANT because you're going to probably have to do a little ANT at the command line unless you're using Paul's ANT builder in CF Eclipse. But running the command line once in a while does not make you a bad programmer. And, you know, it doesn't make you the weird, you know, freaky programmer guy down in the basement just because you know how to navigate the command line. The command line is useful for running scripts. And, you know, maybe what you want to choose for learning a script is Ruby, because Ruby, forget Rails, Ruby does really great job that, you know, solving problems like Perl does, but it's object-oriented, which makes it a little nicer. So if you want to get started, I'm going to really quickly finish up here and then take questions. If you're on Windows, just download Instant Rails. Install one app, that's it. You don't even have to worry about getting Ruby installed and Apache installed and all that. Instant Rails packages it all up into one environment to start with. Locomotive is the equivalent on the Mac. If you're not scared of that scary command line, you install Ruby, and then you use their gem package management system, and you gem install Rails. Poof, it's installed, you're done. If you want to edit Rails, if you're already using Eclipse, there's a Rails plugin for Eclipse called Rad Rails. Another nice thing about Rad Rails for Eclipse is it's got its own version of the Rails environment built in, so it'll even pop it open in the browser and run Rails for you, so you don't even have to install Rails. If you're a Mac guy or gal, TextMate is by far the choice of all the Rails fanboys on their MacBooks sitting in coffee shops writing Web 4.0 applications. And I have to admit, I like TextMate a lot. It's not quite enough for a reason to buy a Mac, but it's good. And there's actually a Cold Fusion bundle now of functionality for TextMate if you're interested in that kind of thing. And there's other plugins. NetBeans has a pretty decent one. They're at a varying stage. If you're a more hardcore Java person, the IntelliJ IDEA, which is a really good Java environment, has a plugin for Ruby. Dreamweaver has some weird Ruby on Rails thing you can plug into it. This is really new, just in the past couple days. Komodo, ActiveState, which is a company that does a lot of the Windows open source software. They package up Perl and Python and all that. Their Komodo integrated development environment, which is based on the Mozilla XUL sort of framework, they just released a free version of it called Komodo Edit that's got IntelliSense type stuff built in for Rails, sorry, for Ruby, for PHP, for Perl, and for Python. And they've still got the commercial version that's about $250, but this is free. And it's a nice Windows and Mac and Linux sort of GUI editor. It's, you know, going to replace your Notepad++ or your TextPad or whatever your vanilla environment was for doing text if you didn't already have a good replacement. So that's it. I don't want to, you know, get too... I tried to keep my enthusiasm for Rails under control because I really like programming in Rails app. But, you know, I've paid my dues to this, you know, the Cold Fusion community as well. I've done a lot of Cold Fusion development. What I used to do is I'd go into shops and I'd take really crappy Cold Fusion applications with 900 lines of code, and I'd kind of stuff them into a more Fusebox MVC container, because at the time Fusebox was the best choice for that, going back to Fusebox 2 and 3 and 4, and, you know, make things a lot easier. You know, that way we didn't have 800 lines. We had, you know, the Fusebox configuration to look at. Now, I have to admit, some of those apps that would have been, you know, Fuseboxed up, Cold Fusion apps, are turning into Rails applications, because for solving web, simple, straightforward web applications, Rails gets you to that holy grail, good, fast, cheap. It's not good if you need to generate PDFs. It's not good if you have to do a lot of fancy charting, unless you want to bang your head against a wall. It's not good if you have to do Java integration. It's impossible to do .NET integration except through a web service. In Rails, so there's still a lot of environments where Rails wins, where Cold Fusion wins over Rails. But, you know, it is good to look at what's going on around you, so you're not suddenly surprised. You know, the argument we've been making for Cold Fusion for years is we're better than Java, yet we're still Java. And, you know, Rails is coming right up on its heels. And if you look at the job posting, there's a lot of Rails job posting. There's a lot of Rails startups, and it's open source, which, you know, has a while Cold Fusion, relatively speaking, doesn't cost a lot, the open source nature makes all of a sudden, oh, it's free, you know, and management all of a sudden thinks it's better when $800, you know, per Cold Fusion license in the scope of a, you know, $200,000 project is meaningless. You know, suddenly somehow that free becomes an issue. But if you're looking for another language, Ruby itself, forget Rails, Ruby is a great scripting language. If you always said, oh, I want to learn Perl or Python or whatever to do all those little code generation things and all that, forget it. Do Ruby, unless you already have some competence in one of the other ones. Ruby is really good for writing quick little one-off scripts. There's a brand new book out from the Pragmatic Programmers called something like Solving Everyday Tasks with Ruby. A cute little book about all sorts of crazy code generation and text generation and utility one-offs with Ruby. And I appreciate your time and attention, especially coming to something that's got nothing to do directly with Cold Fusion, because what I really want you to go away with is, not only is Rails sort of cool, maybe I should take a look at it and figure out how to position myself to compete with the Rails people if I'm in a competitive environment like that, but also, what is cool about, you know, Rails? What can we do for Cold Fusion frameworks? What can we learn from that? Because the Rails guys, it's not like they learned from 15 other Ruby frameworks. You know, I mean, how many people heard of Ruby, you know, before Rails came out? They learned from Java frameworks. They learned from Python frameworks. They learned from PHP frameworks. They learned from seeing people do the same practices over and over. They kind of became best, and that's you know, kind of what they coalesced all together. There's no reason that can't be done in the Cold Fusion world, and it's good to look outside that world to see what people are doing. So I'd be happy to answer questions. I'd be happy to talk in the hall. I'd be happy to convert your Cold Fusion applications to Rails. So I'm just joking. Actually, a lot of the Cold Fusion apps I say I don't want to touch because they work. But anyhow, I appreciate your attention, especially for something that's not necessarily directly related to Cold Fusion, even though it's framework oriented. Anyone have some questions they want to? I'm sorry I couldn't do the demos. There's so many screencasts on the web of, ooh, look at scaffolding on Rails. I mean, you can get those with a net connection right here while I'm talking if you want. But I'd happily answer questions if you've got them about Rails or Ruby. Yeah, Joe. Yep. Not that I know of. Yeah, but there's this guy, Rich Kilmer, who's actually based in this area, and he's been really big on using Flash and more lately Flex with open source tools. He does He's been doing Ruby for a long time. He wrote a Flash to Ruby bridge that just crazy stuff. That's where I'd look. I think InfoEther is his site, but he would be the guy if there's anyone working with ActionScript that does. I mean, he took the next step programming GUI system and re-implemented it in Ruby and Flash at the last OSCE. I mean, the guy's nuts, but in a good way. But he's the guy I know in the open source world that deals with Flash. I've also, Simeon Bateman's site has the link. Other people's probably do too, and some of you have probably already seen the Flex to Ruby on Rails demo that somebody did. Did Mike Nimer do that? Mike Chambers? Somebody did a Flex front end to a Ruby on Rails back end, which I don't understand why you'd ever do something crazy like that. But somewhere, Simeon blogged about it. And you know, that's the only other thing I know about the world of Flex and Flash and ActionScript and Rails. That's all I know. Anybody else? Yes, sir. Yeah, that's a performance thing. Questions about performance with Rails. One of the talks I did yesterday about web deployment frameworks, it's funny to read the questions people ask some of the big Ruby on Rails deployment shops, because they are exactly the questions we get as Cold Fusion developers. Oh, I heard about that stuff, but I mean, Cold Fusion doesn't scale. You know, same thing, Rails doesn't scale. You know, there's two answers. One is, sure, it scales fine, and it's got the same kinds of fluffy figures. You can take any kind of numbers you want. None of them mean anything until you have your real app there. I will say, if I may be a little crude, Rails is a bitch to deploy. Because every month, it used to be every week, every month now, the best practice for deploying a Rails application changes. It used to be, and they get much better performance every time and much more stability. But when I say different, I mean different. Rails used to be like, oh, used FastCGI under Apache. That's how you do it, you know, because that's the best way. Well, no, really, FastCGI is a little flaky under most Apache. So what you should use is Lighty, which is this lightweight but Apache configuration compatible server with a much better FastCGI library. Use Lighty with Rails. Oh, no, wait, we said that, but that's not really what we meant. What you should be doing is using Apache 2.2 with ModProxy with the Mongrel Ruby Rails server behind it, which is now built into it, because that's much faster, and it's true, that is much faster. Oh, but wait, there's this thing called PIN, which is an open source load balancing web server platform, and putting that in, that's a really good idea. So keeping up with that is incredibly frustrating. And it only really matters if you're really seriously worried about scale. I mean, like high-level scaling. For small apps, Rails does a really good job of being able to distribute across either on the same server or over on multiple servers, being able to kind of do a very simple stateless multiple app servers with a couple of web servers, especially if you are using Apache 2.2 with ModProxy in front of it. That works really, really well. And the session in Rails, the session information, it's very easy to cluster the session information in Rails. You can do files, you can do central database, you can do mcached. There's like seven different ways you can deal with sessions, so that really helps scale it out horizontally. And as far as scaling vertically, because it runs on Linux, you know, it runs on just about anything. Joyent is really pushing the envelope by pushing Rails on Solaris grid containers. But James Duncan Davidson, who's a big Rails guy now, used to be a big Java guy, he's using he's demoing in his deployment talks, pushing Rails apps up to Amazon's Elastic Compute Cloud, which is their grid of stuff, and he's using their S3 service for the storage. I mean, it's more for demonstration than running a production application, but the point is, you know, Rails is really good at taking lots of little individual apps and scaling it across a big cluster of them, whether it's all on one machine or a bunch of machines, and people haven't worried too much about scaling since they started deploying it that way, because it works pretty well. And the best example is Basecamp, which gets a ton of traffic. They're willing to talk about it. You know, they're kind of like the key site for, you know, like high-end performance on Rails. And they ironically do it on FastCGI, because that's what they, you know, originally did it on. So it's no worse. It's the same argument for Cold Fusion. Sure, it's going to scale. You know, it depends on what you mean by scale and what you really mean by performance and which aspects of it are really important. And you can throw hardware at it pretty cheap. JRuby doesn't scale anywhere near as well yet, but you know, neither did Cold Fusion 6. So that's just a matter of time too. So that's a very vague answer. It's going to scale as well as anything else, you know, in general. I don't think you'll have anything that you need to be too concerned about. And there's a lot of layers where you have hooks where you can improve the performance of it. It's really cool. That said, I only have had to scale up to, you know, 10, 15,000 users a month, not at a time, but, you know, a month over, you know, the course of an application. And that's worked fine on, you know, kind of two Dell web servers. You know, I mean, not $100,000 a year, you know, like $5,000, $8,000, $10,000 a year. So that was a long answer that said nothing. Anybody else have anybody else have some questions? Because I'm supposed to wind up. I'm going to remind you to fill out those cards, the reviews. I'm happy to talk about Rails more for a little while. And I appreciate your time and attention. My name's John Ashenfelter. I do consulting, training, and mentoring in Cold Fusion, and now Rails development, a lot of it. And I'm based down in Central Virginia. So thanks for your time. And I will, I'm glad you came to the conference and took a chance on something other than just the Cold Fusion stuff.
My name's Dave Powell, and this is Design.